Welcome, one and all, with your host, Rolando, and his co-host, John. We are the Skeleton Boys.
Hello and welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
And I'm Johnny.
And welcome to the show. This week we are reviewing Leap of Faith. John will give us a plot in five words or less. We'll go into our first thoughts and then go into a deeper spoiler analysis.
All right, here's my five word review of this.
Review?
Plot summary. It's been a long week.
We could cut this out.
just put an effect on it. Okay, five words. Maybe just watch the movie. That's it. That's what I got.
Maybe just watch the movie. Okay. All right. Before we get into like our first thoughts about the doc, I wanted to just briefly talk about the movie itself and, you know, how you felt about it.
So there's a lot of interesting things in this. Like, obviously, William Friedkin is like a legendary director, you know. His movies, I'm not gonna say I like all his movies, but some of his movies are, you know, very well done. I feel like I really appreciate movies that are nicely achieved while not overstating or understating what the intention is and everything. So like you understand what the intention is when you watch some of his movies, like especially The Exorcist. You get what point's about to come across, you get the build up, and maybe that's just because it's like 2020 and not 1970 or what was it? When did The Exorcist come out?
I don't know. Hold on. scrambling.
Okay, we'll just cut this whole section out. We'll go 1, 2, 3. Oh, you don't know. Obviously, it's 1970. Insert number here.
It's like we're underprepared, but we are not underprepared.
Well, anyway, the whole idea is like maybe then it was a little different, but it wasn't because you still had very beautiful movies coming out in like the 50s and 60s with so much going on, especially in different countries. Like you got to give it to like Italy. Like what's his name? The guy that was like, he was really full of himself, but fuck, are his movies great? The guy that did like Paparazzi and something number 9. Oh damn, I can't believe I'm blanking on all this stuff. Yes, Fellini. Sorry, you know, like you get his intentions with every shot he does and with his choices, you know. Mm-hmm. And I feel like William Friedkin is not. Well, I'm gonna say he doesn't do it as beautifully, but he still has that same sort of deal going on. So I'm not. With that said.
Yeah, 1973.
But that said, I high key wish I had never heard William Friedkin talk.
Okay,
about anything.
Okay, before I get into that, I just want to briefly say, like, The Exorcist is like one of my all time favorite horror movies. The movie itself is terrifying and scary, and you know, there's a lot of substance in how he shot it and how he, you know, brought the film to life. How it doesn't really feel like a movie; it feels like a document. You know what I mean?
Right.
It feels like something that is very plausible that could possibly happen, and it all just sort of, it's very grounded and it's very dark. It's very like relentless, you know, very filthy, dirty movie. So I really, those are the aspects I really loved about it. So I was excited to watch this documentary about it. With that being said, yeah, I mean, I William Friedkin.
Yeah, I was gonna say
this is a one person documentary. This is just about William Friedkin. This is only about him. You know what I mean? So,
Yeah.
Having him talk for what, a good hour 40 was
44 something.
Was a little rough. I mean, he said a lot of interesting things about the movie, about his process, about some of the filmmaking process he did with the movie, but nothing that felt substantial. Is that the fairest way to put it? Or
there's like certain moments where I'm like, okay, that is pretty interesting, but it's making me think less of these scenes, unfortunately. But yeah, I don't know. There was a couple of times I'm like, oh dude, like, please shut up. Because you ever watch Arnold Schwarzenegger do DVD commentary on his movies?
No.
Oh, okay. If anybody has, it's really funny. Because he just kind of, almost line by line tells you exactly what's going on in the scene. You know, that's his whole DVD commentary. He goes through an entire 2-hour movie just telling you exactly what's going on. And he's like, we're going to shake hands because we haven't seen each other in such a long time, and we're going to fight the Predator later. Like, that's the whole DVD commentary, and it's really funny. I feel like William Friedkin did this in like an intermediate level. Like, Arnold did like the easy version of this. And he was just kind of like, oh, well, you know, like I pull the camera out at this part to show that there's a relief in tension. I was like, oh, no shit. You know, like half the time I was doing that, like, oh, come on. But I guess it's somebody made him sit down and talk about this movie in its entirety almost.
Yeah, to that, I'm not familiar with the director, but he clearly is a fan of the movie and fan of William Friedkin.
Oh yeah, who?
Alexander O. Felipe. Since I don't know if I said
it looks
that.
Like he kind of just does this. He did something like with that with Hitchcock, George Lucas. He did an Alien one.
Oh, okay.
I guess this is kind of his thing.
Okay, probably looking back at old movies, getting the like the directors or people involved with the movies take on it kind of deal.
Yeah. But the, I mean, a few key points of it. Oh,
no, sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to mention the few key points of interest for me. Since this is something that I've always been interested in, I dabble in and I've been getting a little more serious with like scoring stuff. And I didn't think I was going to be that disappointed with what he decided, like, oh, and this just did not work. And then they show you what score was written for certain things. I'm like, dude, that sounded so fucking cool. Like, why would you get rid of that? And he's like, no, I needed something different. So I went with Tubular Bells. It was just perfect. And then after you watch the other scores in this one particular scene where the mom is walking down just like the streets and everything's kind of nice, and then Tubular Bells comes on, you know, historically, even for me, that was always such a like, oh, this is so creepy. Like, whoa, that's weird. Oh, man. And then you hear the other scores that could have been used. I'm like, oh, shit, dude. Like, and Tubular Bells was like a basically a free domain thing.
You know, like, yeah, it was.
Like, oh, dude, come on. Like, how can you be that full of yourself and then not see like what works and doesn't? I mean, it clearly still worked out for him, so maybe I don't know what I'm talking about, but like the beginning where he's like, no, I had all this great like sound of these guys working. Oh, actually, before I get it, no, okay, let me finish that thought, and then we should probably talk about how he decided to shoot the beginning, which for me is very problematic, but I guess it was like the early 70s, late 60s, where he's like, no, I had all this like great sound of all these people working at the beginning at the archaeological dig or whatever. And then they play the score that would have been there. And I was like, holy shit, this is so cool. but I don't know. Whatever.
I think they were trying to say like he didn't he wanted it. They had just come off the French Connection, which was a very like same style, gritty, grounded kind of documentary. And even in this movie, they mentioned the cinematographer he works with is sort of a documentary filmmaker, right? He shot some of Castro's
Che Guevara?
Stuff in Cuba and stuff like that. He was documenting Castro's rise or whatever as a filmmaker. And so he used him for French Connection and has the same sort of thing they go over is that he's supposed to find the scene, right? Like they said they would do all the setup for the lights or whatever, and then he was supposed to find the scene between the actors and stuff like that, which is really sounds really challenging since you and I both worked on sets before. So yes. It's like to just set up everything and then the cinematographer just show up and just the way he made it sound is like the cinematographer just shows up on set and then he has to like find the scene. I mean, there's no blocking. It's not like,
I think like he's definitely one of those fucking directors that has no clue with certain things. Like he probably had no idea, like 100%. If they wanted to get through these days, the DP did talk to the gaffer.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe outside of his view, because the director's not always there. Like I think that's something people don't realize is the director's not always there. There's like a shit ton of people that work on these films, and there's just like certain moments where he would talk about that. I was like, you didn't. They did. Like, stop taking credit for stuff. Like, he's like, there'd only be one light source. No, there isn't. Like, don't spew bullshit you don't know about.
Yeah.
So that's why there's, again, certain moments where I'm like, oh, you're making me like this less because you thought it was something that clearly 100+ people worked on to make it look good and you're taking all the credit.
Yeah.
There's just a couple of moments, maybe I'm wrong, but there's a couple of moments where I felt that way. Like, oh, this sounds all too familiar.
Yeah. No, yeah.
Oh,
definitely.
The beginning.
Yeah, that's right. The beginning. What were you going to say about the beginning?
So the dig where he said, something about he found these German archaeologists working on a dig over in where did he say it ended up being?
It was actually in North Iraq, where it took place.
There was like he found like some small town that was even a small town for Iraq, I guess, right? And they were doing like an archaeological dig. And he was like, oh, I guess we can, we can shoot this. In my head, I was like, okay, so you're stealing footage. And now there's like over 100 people on screen that have no idea who you are, aren't getting paid, and are probably getting paid, like well underpaid, to be in this movie that they're probably never going to see because, I think this is called exploitation, but I could be wrong.
The exploitation. I'm just kidding. Yeah. Instead of The Exorcist.
Yeah, exactly, because... I was like, oh, man, this is, okay.
I guess he doesn't go into the, like, the practical, of all the things he did. He's just looking at it more from his perspective. Like, this is what I shot. This is what I got, and why this is what I wanted to happen. This is why this scene worked and why it didn't work.
Right.
Stuff like that. So
he was 100% correct in... Like, I guess, get flashback parts of the book.
Yeah, the opening scene.
What he mentioned, which was like, yeah, well, I guess there wasn't more flashback parts in the book as it went on. I thought there were. I haven't read it, but I thought that's what he was mentioning, and he cut all that stuff out.
Flashback stuff. I don't remember. I think the prologue is the North Iraq stuff.
Right, yeah. I just thought when he was talking to the writer of the book, also sent him the screenplay, right?
Mm-hmm.
Initially.
Mm-hmm.
And that he started marking through the actual book because he said that the screenplay was like bad and didn't do the book justice. mm-hmm. and started cutting out anything that would be like a flashback or some sort of thing. So it would just be like,
Oh yeah. He wanted the movie to be just like straight ahead. Right. He didn't want it to be jumping around in time. He wanted it just to kind of keep it on one timeline basically.
Yeah. To keep it I guess engaged, which I was like, yeah, that's pretty good. Cause he even mentions during the exorcism, he's like, we can't cut. We need to like keep focusing on them. Mm-hmm. And there's only one cutaway to the mom knitting downstairs, and she's obviously concerned, just like staring at the ceiling. And I was like, okay, yeah, that's pretty cool. Oh man, we could have had Stacy Keach.
Stacy Keach.
We could have had Stacy Keach. We could have had
Stacy Keach. That would have been interesting.
Who did a really great job had to come in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stacy Keach. It's crazy how they did cast him, and they go on to say that this other actor, what's his name? Jason Miller. He was obsessed with the part, right? He really wanted to audition for the part. And so he ended up like auditioning for William Friedkin. He was blown away. William was blown away by him. So he had to like, even though Stacy Keach was, already cast, they had to pay him off whatever his salary the entire salary.
I was like, nice,
dude, nice. It's a good payday.
I also like his introduction to that story is that actor told him, I've read the script and I'm that guy. You don't understand, I'm that guy. I'm gonna go over there and audition for you. And he's like, no, we've already cast it. And like, I'm gonna go audition for you, I'm that guy. And he's like, fine, you're coming on over here on your own dime. And we'll shoot your screenshot, and then I'm gonna directly pull the film out of the camera and give it to you. And I was like, "Who the fuck would do that? That sounds like a lie. That sounds like a blatant lie." Because film is so cheap, and it's so easy to set these things up. Oh, yeah. Come on.
No, yeah, I mean.
I also take this like this guy is really romanticizing the whole process, because I feel like you watch other people talk about working on the film and they say how much of a nightmare it was.
Yeah.
Like it was just dangerous and the conditions were wrong. And like when he in his head, it was a much more beautiful thing when he was shooting the shotgun off. And then they show a picture of it and he's like clearly holding a pistol. It would look like a Deagle or like a Magnum or something. It's like, no, that's not a shotgun for one. But two, why would you do that? And why would you think like, I'm just so I can get a real reaction out of them? I'm like, oh, they're actors, you know? It's their job. You don't have to traumatize them or blow their eardrums out.
So yeah, there's a long stretch of this movie where they talk about how we worked with actors, how we worked on set, and it's a little upsetting in essence. Like he did that to get a reaction out of, whatever the scene was like a reaction from the tape or the recordings of an exorcist or something.
Right, yeah.
And there was another instance where he slapped an actor, didn't he? Because the guy wasn't an actor.
No, he cast like a couple of real priests. Yeah. Yeah. He was like, you know, I wasn't getting what I wanted out of him. I was like, well, no shit, they're not actors.
Yeah.
Why is this so difficult to understand?
And it's the end of the movie. It's a big moment. You know, his friend just, you know, committed suicide. So then, they're relying on a guy who's not a professional actor to find the moment and be good in it. And it's a lot to ask, basically. And his answer to it, because he wasn't happy with what he was getting, was to slap the actor in the face, which is very problematic.
Yeah, yeah. And the whole do you trust me? And he's like, yeah, of course I trust you, William. Or I don't know if they call him Billy or some. However he was wording these things to make it sound more personable, right? Do you trust me? He's like, do you love me? He was like, yeah, of course. And then he slapped him as hard as he could, and the guy did the scene and he went up to me and he said, oh, thank you William, thank you. And I was like, shut up.
Yeah, there's stories like that. I mean, there's stories that a little, like you said, romanticizing the film. I did like when they went into how he got the voice of the demon.
That was pretty cool. Yeah.
How he had thought of this actress. I don't remember her name.
Oh, what's her name?
Yeah. And you know, all the movies she was in, I recognized, but I don't remember her name.
Oh, her name is Linda Blair. No, I'm just kidding. Shit.
Well, anyways, she got this actress. Oh, go ahead.
Mercedes McCambridge.
Mercedes McCambridge, yeah. And she, I guess she had been out of acting for a little bit at this point, but she had been in these all these big movies, right? She acted in Giant, I believe, and she was in Touch of Evil. Big movies, big, you know, big star or whatever. And she came and did The Voice, right? But they go on to say how she did The Voice. She drank a bunch. She would eat eggs, right?
Yeah, and raw eggs and smoke cigarettes.
And yeah. And she's like, I could do The Voice, but I need certain things, which is the stuff that I mentioned. And then she went on to say that she needed two priests to be with her. She said this.
Yeah, I think it was like more than one priest. It was like a couple of priests.
It was a couple.
And they needed to be on set so she could like, he said that she had mentioned she had been sober for a while and that she's like, I don't drink. Oh, there's a ghost in your room. Oh, it's just your cat. she had been sober and she said, in order to do this, I have to start drinking again and I have to eat raw eggs and I have to smoke cigarettes. And I, again, romanticizing the whole idea because I would have been like, okay, then probably don't do it then. Like, don't. it's a fucking movie. Let me just horribly torture people and not give a shit about their well-being afterward because I've created my masterpiece. That's why I say it made me like, I don't think I like this guy.
Yeah, he's definitely a 70s director, if that makes sense. Like he comes from that generation, you know.
But so, that was a cool story to hear how she
found the voice. Iconic voice, yeah. To find the iconic voice in that. Even his you mentioned a little bit about the score, and I liked also that he kind of was resistant to put a lot of scores, so he really like took his time to find the right pieces of music, and a lot of it shows in the movie, you know. And I mean, I think what I want to say about the movie is that I think that I liked a lot of things because it's only him talking. It kind of lessens it in a way, you know, because we're not really talking, it's just whatever he's recounting, and some stuff was interesting, some stuff's not interesting. I would say if you're a fan of The Exorcist, I would check it out if you're interested, if you're a big fan of the movie, you know.
Right, yeah. But I feel like there's like a few things that he mentioned where I'm like, okay, yeah, I didn't know that. But there's several other documentaries that are out there that kind of really explain more of everything, you know, as more of a whole and tell you all these things anyway. Without this guy filleting himself. I'm just kidding. he thinks very highly of himself. And this goes back to when I mentioned, if you're watching a scene where somebody's like doing a slow zoom in and then you have to explain to me like, oh, it's to create tension. It's like, oh, is that what it's for? I thought it was to be like funny, like in 70s. Whoa. Like, no, there's just so many moments like, well, yeah, obviously, dude, you don't have to like explain every single second of these things. Like, we get that.
Yeah.
And yeah. I don't know, like maybe they asked him about it, you know, obviously, but then I didn't. Like, I don't think people are dumb, you know.
Yeah.
About certain stuff like that. I mean.
Hmm. Yeah. No, I see your point.
Yeah, there's just a couple of times I just paused and walked away for a second. I don't know what it was about him. He just rubbed me the wrong way.
Yeah.
But, oh well. And that's how I feel about Leap of Faith.
Yeah, do you want to just have some the last thought there about it?
I know you mentioned, you said if you're a fan, maybe you should check it out. I feel like it's 45 minutes too long, to be honest. I don't know. I didn't love it. I had a hard time watching it, but just because of the way this guy talked about it, and he just thinks very highly of himself, I guess is what I'm getting at.
So it was hard to.
It got to me at one point.
Yeah, it was hard to get into, right? Because he's not the, even though he's the director, he's not the most like natural storyteller of this.
Yeah, no, project. I was going to mention that too. He's a bad storyteller, actually.
I mean, no disrespect, right? I mean, he's an accomplished filmmaker and everything, yeah. But I mean, it's just one of those things where, you know, sometimes, you know, we're not. You could be a fan of something and not have the best way of talking about it. I don't know if that makes sense, but
yeah, no, that's true. And for him to mention that he's like, his main influences for all this stuff were, mostly paintings, you know, that got a little irritating at one point. And then sometimes he goes into different things where he just starts to like, really go off on movies that he really loves, and it's like, okay, what does this have to do with The Exorcist? Nothing really. And then the whole Zen Garden thing where he's like, I was like, what the hell is a Zen Garden? It's like, you went off about these fucking paintings that some of them, like, I do understand these artists and I do understand how important the work is, but low key it kind of looks like somebody's priming a wall to repaint it, like they stripped wallpaper off. And here you are talking about, like, I don't understand this sandbox with all these lines in it and some rocks. Like, what is this? It's like, you don't, it looks overly complicated and beautiful, but you're going to critique that. But then you're going to talk about these paintings in Chicago like they're your best friends. It's like, okay.
So this movie wasn't spooky enough, huh? What's the spooky rating?
If we're going with spooky bones.
Yeah, what's the rating?
If we're going with sexy spooky bones. I'm gonna have to give it 2 out of 10 sexy spooky bones.
Yeah, I'll do 4.1 out of 100 spooky sexy bones.
The spookiest thing about this is the decor of his living room is very gaudy.
Right? I thought the same thing. Yeah,
yeah. It was. So I was trying not to laugh while saying that. It's like, yeah.
Was it shot like, in Trump Plaza? Or what
the yeah, no that? Shit. I was like, who's comfortable in this place?
But yeah. So next week, we are doing something completely different. Weird. Or it could be like, or I don't know. I haven't never seen it, so it could be the same. But it's a little movie called Society.
Society by Brian Yuzna. Yuzna? One of those two is his last name. Is his last name. Yuzna or Yuzna? Brian that made Society.
Yeah.
So I'm excited. I'm excited for this one. I mean, the thumbnail is a guy smiling, but it's also somebody's butt. His face is on a butt.
Yeah. So,
but yeah,
we'll be back next week with Society, and you know, keep it spooky.
And yeah, do that.
All right.
Spooky. All right. Till next week.
Till next week.